It's Tuesday, March 6th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey, everyone. Yes, it's fresh week. We're ready to get started. We've got a great show for you tonight. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume, because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii. How's everyone? I hope you had a great weekend. I hope your first day back at work has been productive. I know mine has been very, very busy and got a lot to cover tonight. And I tell you, got a great show for you. Hey, for all of you that are, of course, long-term subscribers of the show, thanks for staying subscribed. Thanks for being part of the Ohana, being part of the family here. And thanks for your continued support and all the great feedback that you provide via email or voicemail comments and so forth. But if you're checking out the show for the very first time, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com, get signed up for the newsletter, and you can find a link to that available in the third column of the website. Well, how's everybody? I'm doing good. I really, really am. And my desk is clear. That was a goal of the weekend, to get the desk cleared. And part of it was, is I had stuff stacked up to go see my CPA today. And I got everything done, ready, packaged up, and went into the office with him. And I was in there probably about an hour answering questions and going over the end year figures and talking about some stuff I have to structure in this year. He told me, Todd, you need to start taking a paycheck. And I don't normally talk a lot about my actual show business on the show, but Geek News Central itself, the website's managed by Podcasts That Connect, to the company that is in both my wife's and I name. And up to this point, I've essentially been putting everything into the business, and not taking anything out. And the guy told me today, he says, well, you're gonna have to write yourself a check this year for some sort of amount of money, and or else the IRS is going to come after you, and you know, because of legal business and all that stuff. So I told the wife tonight, I said, well, I guess I have to write myself a paycheck. I don't know how big it's going to be, but it's kind of funny. And, well, you know, CPAs, they keep you out of trouble. And that's the main thing. So it was a question I had asked today and gave me some feedback. So how many of you got your business taxes in? Are you done? Or have you got your personal stuff in? Was Uncle Sam good to you this year? For those of you that live here in the United States, did you get a refund? Or did you end up writing them a check? My goal, even with my personal taxes, is to never, ever, ever let Uncle Sam have any more dollars than he is absolutely entitled to throughout the year. So my goal really at the end of the year is, if I have to write him a check for a couple $100s, or he has to refund me a couple $100, that's how I have my stuff set up. I know a lot of people use the tax system for, you know, essentially a savings plan, but I've got a savings clam. It's a savings plan, and it's called CDs in a bank. It's not, or mutual funds or IRAs or whatever, you know, whatever the investment scheme would be. Definitely not savings accounts. Just got to keep a little bit of an emergency reserve in there, but boy, they don't hardly pay you anything anymore. But anyway, got all that done, so he's got until next week to get the paperwork back to me to get signed. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what that tax bill is going to be. And what else is going on here? Well, I had to create a couple of videos, and I don't know what's going to come of them. I had to do a promo video and kind of a short segment video for a special promotion that's forthcoming. And I'll tell you more about that at a later date. But I had my daughter in here yesterday afternoon, and she was the director. I had her running the camera, And I actually scripted out the promo that I was going to do. And she held up a little card for me so I could read the script. And, you know, I understand why television stations have teleprompters, because really, in order to look at the camera and not act like you're reading a script is really, really hard. And it was long enough that, you know, and I just wanted to get it done and over with. I really didn't take the time to learn it. So we end up doing, finally, I got to the point where I just got frustrated. I said, just throw that piece of paper on the floor and let me wing it. And just like I do the podcast. And I said, we're limited to 40 seconds on this. I said, when Dad gets to 30, you hold up two hands and start counting down. So she did just like that. And I was able to close it right on the 40-second mark, and it was perfect. So I got that put together, and then we had to do a 4-minute and 30-second clip. So I did a little piece on essentially about the new media, podcasting, video casting, so forth, got that together. So when that gets ready to be published at the site that it's going to be published on, I'll point you all over at that, and you can take a look at it. Hey, on Saturday afternoon, actually, it was a Saturday afternoon on the East Coast. It was here in the morning in Honolulu. We had a roundtable over at techpodcast.com. And oh my goodness, this is one that you definitely want to go and download, because it was an absolutely a great show. And there's some savings that you can get from a product called Network Magic. Now, many of you probably already are familiar with Network Magic, but if you are have upgraded a machine to Vista, or if you have a cross-platform network like I do here, you've got an Apple machine on one side and you've got a Windows Vista machine on the other, the $29 that this application cost is worth its weight in gold. And I guess the only way to really convince you of that and make you understand the power of this is to go over to, actually, there's a link available via Geek News Central, or you can go over to techpodcast.com and watch it online. You watch the full screen version, not the one that you can get for your iPod, because it's very, very critical that you see how easy using this application is and the power in this thing. But if you decide that you want to buy Network Magic, and you get over to their site at networkmagic.com, and you use the code SDR2007, when you check out, you can save 10% on that. So I've got to get a copy purchased myself, and I'm going to be running it here. And once you see the demo, you're going to be like, wow. And I know a few of you that have gotten Macs have had problems mapping drives and stuff on your Windows machines. Fear no more. They got a Windows version, a Mac version. Really, really awesome. And, of course, I talked about Google Apps. I talked about Netica, which is my DNS host. Let's see here. What else? There was one other topic. Crash Plan was another. I think it was Crash Plan. I'm sorry. I got to go over to the website and give you the actual link up here. Yeah, it's called Crash Plan. Pretty awesome application for backups. And this is an application I've actually already downloaded and registered, and I'm using it here immediately. I downloaded it after the show, after Lloyd Hansen demonstrated it. And just, you know, some really, really good gems on the roundtable. And I think if you take time to watch it, you'll see how powerful the GoToMeeting web conferencing solution was, and why we really love using that application. Of course, you can try GoToMeeting free yourself as well. You can get a free 30-day trial at GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast. But if you look at the actual video event, you'll actually see some of the cool tools. And I tell you, it's every day I'm in on that application and using it with someone. So it just become an integral part of my tool sets here. Even if they weren't a sponsor of the show, I'd still be using it. And it is. It's pretty awesome. So check that out. Of course, check the roundtable out. That's the most important thing. And thanks to Andy McCaskey over at Slashdot.review for getting the CEO of Pure Networks, Jeff Irwin, on. And, of course, a big thanks to Lloyd Hansen for his participation as well. I'll be honest, folks. Tonight, I'm really struggling in trying to come up with the right words to talk about a topic that has kind of got me riled up today a little bit. But I'm going to kind of not talk about that topic tonight. I'm going to have to take a few days and do some analysis. I'm going to talk to my team at Raw Voice and come up with an appropriate comment for the issue that's out there. But it is involving the podcasting space, and I'll come back to it on a later show. I promise you that. But tonight, there's no way I can really talk to the topic. I'm not even going to reveal the topic at hand just because it wouldn't be appropriate to do so at this time. But I will tell you that I am struggling with the topic right now. It's the first time I've ever had an issue. It's the first time ever that I've not been able to bring an issue to the show that I've really had some angst about. And it kind of is putting me in a dilemma right now. On one hand, I really want to talk about this subject. On the other hand, what I may have to say could be construed incorrectly in the space. So I'm going to just kind of hold off at this point, and I'll come back to it a later date. You guys probably wonder, what the heck is he talking about? But I will say that every once in a while, and this is really, the first time that I've run into this dilemma in this show, because, you know, I've all been pretty outspoken. I get on my soapbox, and I fire from the hip, but I'm trying to be a little bit cautious in this particular topic field, and maybe we'll talk about that later on why. But anyway, let's move on, and let's get into the content tonight. I've talked about I've got that covered. Can't talk about that subject because that's the subject I wanted to kind of get on the top rope on. But before we move on here, let's take care of a little business. Hey, I do want to thank everyone that's been supporting GoDaddy out there. I actually got an email from a gentleman that's a listener of the show down in Australia tonight. He was having some problems with a promo code, and I captured some information that he had. I sent it off to my rep there to see what we could do. If you've had any problem with any of the promo codes, let me know, please. Please do understand that if you're renewing a domain, the promo codes generally do not work if you're renewing. So just look for the deals that they've got going on their website. It is one limitation of the promo codes. But, of course, if you're out doing web hosting accounts, and this is kind of the thing right now that is I'm really excited about, is they've got some great stuff going on in web hosting. If you get over to GoDaddy and you are looking to get a website launched, or, you know, you're thinking about putting a website up, definitely consider the web hosting applications or the web hosting plans over at GoDaddy. And I got a new code for you tonight. When you get over there, if you want to use the code POD58, when you check out, that's going to save you some money on some web hosting accounts. Of course, if you get domains or anything else, definitely use the promo code TODD, T-O-D-D. That'll get you 10% off all the time on any products and orders at GoDaddy, with some restrictions, of course. Or you can use that code GEEK5 to get 15% off any order of $20 or more. Thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. All right, what have I got lined up for you tonight? Well, I tell you, probably top of mind is the first article is that, boy, there's just been an amazing amount of news coming out on multiple sites about the U.S. Copyright Royalty Board rejecting webcasters' current payment rates and embracing SoundExchange. And this is, if you listen to any streams out there, those days may be numbered for some of those radio streams that are available right now. The new rates are going to force webcasters to pay for each song streamed to each user and increase over the next few years as follows. And this is what's amazing. Today, those that are streaming content are going to be paying approximately 1.28 cents per listener per hour with these new rates. Now, what's going to increase is in 2007, and what they've got it broke down to here is it would cost to stream one song to one listener this year is going to cost 0.0008, and in 2007 it's going to cost 0.0011, this is of a cent, 0.0014, 0.0018, 0.0019 through 2010 on the increase. So almost more than 100% increase between now and 2010. And boy, the webcasters, the streamers are out there are just howling bloody murder, because even if your show has one or two listeners on the stream at all times, what's going to happen is if the station is small, even tiny sites are going to owe a minimum of $500 per channel per year. Now, that's crazy. I think what this means is there's going to be a lot of these webcasters are essentially going to be they're going to be going down in flames. Now, remember, we fought this a couple of years ago, and there was a little bit of a reprieve made, but that reprieve is well over. And so there's going to be real, real money being charged to these guys that do streams. Now, personally, it doesn't affect me too much, but I know some of you probably listen to streams. As a matter of fact, my employer blocks streaming channels within the internet there at my work. And I know some of you probably are restricted on streams as well. This, you know, sadly, and I don't want to, you know, the one person's misery is another person's gain, but I think the podcasting community is going to see a significant increase in listenership as this as these people bail. You know, these people have to drop their streams because it becomes too expensive to deliver the content. So this is a major, major change. Now, one thing I did find very interesting, and we'll talk about it, Microsoft here later on in the show, is where there's actually starting to be some shift that may offset some of this impact based on some advertising that's being brought to the space. But I think those of you that are podcasting, those of you that are video casting, you're set up in a great position right now. So long as you're using indie music and so forth, you're not going to, there'll be really no impact. And to podcasters, most podcasters are following the letter of the law. There is no impact whatsoever. But I know that the discussion boards on those that have been streaming have really, really been hot today. But how many of you actually listen to streams of top 40 or whatever genre you listen to, and how many of those streams are made up of content that is controlled by the RIAA, that is, you know, labeled music, quote unquote? Maybe what we'll see here is maybe we'll see some of these streaming sites really start to focus in on the indie labels, and in order to kind of save their businesses a little bit, is to move to that particular music genre. But it's very, very interesting here what's going to what we're going to see here. But, you know, if I don't know, what do you think? Do you think a penny or a penny and a half is acceptable to charge for a listener listening for 1 hour on a stream? You know, and if you really think about it, though, if you have a stream that's popular and you have if you scale and you have 100 listeners on your stream, essentially 24 hours a day, you know, that's 20, would be 24. Let's see, if am I figuring that right? Yeah, 100 listeners an hour. That's $1.20 that they're going to have to pay, and or $24 a day, and times that out by 30. You know, you're talking some significant bucks going back to the folks at the Sound Exchange. Now, sadly, most of that money, I'm sure, how much of that's going to get back to the actual artist? I'm sure pennies on the dollar are going to get back to the artist from the Sound Exchange. So only time will tell what will happen here on this. But I'm kind of, well, I think what's happened here is that the Sound Exchange folks have probably been heavily engaged here for some time, and has basically cut these streaming sites, they cut their knees off when they weren't expecting it. And I had heard nothing. I had heard nothing whatsoever about this brewing up to the point when this was announced. And I'm sure that the Sound Exchange and other organizations, excuse me, I yawned on you. Gosh, that's terrible. I'm sure that they have been in there working those groups very, very heavily. And we'll see what happens with this. But the RIAA is definitely making an impact here, because they're a big supporter. They work in conjunction with the Sound Exchange folks. All right, how many of you are utilizing the Netflix Netflix Watch Now feature. How many of you subscribe to that? I personally have not, but I know some people have. But apparently their site's got a little bit of a bug. And if you used all of your screening time up from them, and I don't know how long this bug's going to last, but there's an article out right now talking how you can gain some time back by a very simple action on your part. I don't necessarily believe in abusing a company, and I don't foresee how people would actually be using more of this viewing time than what they allot for, but apparently someone has found a workaround. This article has been all over the net today as well. But anyway, this article will be linked up in the show notes. All right, you know, with Microsoft getting the huge, huge hammer here a couple of weeks ago with having to pay the big MP3 patent fine, there's been a lot of discussion on multiple sites. So there's an article in the New York Times. There's an article that I'll link to here in TechDirt that kind of describes how many MP3 patents that are out there. If you haven't followed this, Microsoft actually paid $16 million for licensing rights to a group, I believe, in either France or Germany, one of the two, that was quote-unquote the supposed patent holder for MP3 technology. Well, with Microsoft potentially owing this big, huge amount, $1.5 billion to Lucent over certain patents that Lucent claims covers MP3 technologies, this is kind of like, well, we paid, now we got to pay again, or we're getting fined to pay another group because they've got another patent. But apparently there's a whole bunch of people that got their hand in a cookie jar on this, and there's multiple patents that are under MP3. But it just goes to show you how broke the patent system is. Is, you know, you pay one company, you think you're good, and all of a sudden this other company rears its ugly head and said, oh, look at my piece of paper, you're infringing on my little piece of the patent as well, pay me, pay me. This, what this sets up is a huge, huge paradox, because there's going to be a lot of companies that they're going to, you know, if this stands, they're going to be going after a lot of other companies that are using MP3 technology, and I bet you we're going to see some companies go broke because of it. You know, if Microsoft has to pay $1.5 billion, you know, they can afford to pay that out of their war chest, even though it definitely would hurt them. But I can't see other companies being able to be so resilient in this. And there's something definitely broken with the patent system when, you know, more than one person can reach their hand in your back pocket and take your wallet out and max all your credit cards out because you have to pay them for their little bit of portion of a patent. So this is an issue, and you know, there's a lot of vultures out there that do nothing but patent enforcement, and they go up and buy a company just for the patents, and then they exploit that by going out and going after a few smaller companies to get some legal precedent set, and then they go after some big fish. And Lucent was big enough where they could go after Microsoft and fight them toe-to-toe in court, and they won huge. So this could make, you know, I just wonder how long it's going to be before, by default, we will stop having MP3 as a default format and people move to some of the open source formats like OGG that is completely capable of recreating audio in the same quality as MP3 does, probably better in some instances. So at some point, we may have to look all moving there. I don't know what's going to happen to small independent people like me that create a show with this types of groups come after and say, hey, you're creating MP3 files. You have a, you know, your show's commercial. Pay us for that. I don't know. I doubt that. I'm sure that that could happen. And I think there's a certain monetary limit or amount that you can make, and if I remember correctly, we were well underneath that, but how many companies really are there out there? You know, how many of these major news media companies are creating MP3 files? Probably they have millions of listeners. Are you know, they may end up owing millions and millions of dollars in money that they have to pay back to these guys for deploying MP3s on their networks. Very, very interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how this washes out. Right, next up is an article. There's actually been an update to iTunes, so many of you probably have started to see the new version being announced on your system and have been prompted to do a download. But iTunes 7.1 is available, and many of you will get it if you've got it downloaded so far. Have they done anything to the podcasting section? Has it improved, or is it the same? Has it messed your library up when you did the upgrade? I'd love to hear from you on this. I'll probably update a machine tomorrow. But one thing I did notice in the reviews is they've got a new mode that it can run in where it actually goes full screen. You can actually see all of the album art up on the screen. It has a little mini player down the bottom. And then it allows you to click, I guess, to go back into normal iTunes mode. Looks pretty cool. I don't know if I, when I'm listening to music, all that stuff's running in the background. I don't have nothing running up front. But I guess if you like to have something put up on your screen on your TV or something, if you're using it for that instance, I guess it'd be kind of cool. But otherwise, not a feature that I'm going to use a lot. But we'll see what other new features they've got in there. Okay, I've got a article that talks about 8 confessions of a former Verizon sales rep. And this is something that I found to be pretty interesting. And this website is actually has done pretty well recently. And I've found a couple of articles on it. It's called The Consumerist at consumerist.com. And I think I picked up 3 or 4 articles from this site in the last couple of days. Some very, very good content on it. But anyway, here are some of the things that you do not want to do when you're getting a new phone or getting a new contract. It says never get a 2-year contract. The only benefit to a 2-year contract is a $50 savings on your phone. It's not worth it. Take the $50 and get a 1-year, then you can upgrade to a new phone every 10 months. They go on and saying that Verizon reps get tons of money from new lines and certain accessories and text packages. Take advantage of this. They won't let a new customer walk out the door, play hardball. They will do anything to get the new lines. Verizon makes dollars off the service, not the phones. Tell them you don't want to mail in the rebate. Tell them you don't want to mail in the rebate. Oh, there does come a point of diminishing returns. For example, if you walked in and wanted a $39 plan and free Treo 700, it's not going to happen. So another thing he goes in here says is mention the lost or stolen program to get 25% off a new phone, even if you're under contract. And this is kind of deceptive. This is if you've got a current program with them and you walk in and tell them that you've lost or had your other phone stolen. It's not cool in my circumstance to try to rip companies off that way. They also go on to say if you're on a rate plan of $59.99 or higher, you can get a new phone and new contract for the discounted price after 12 months. Goes on to say the insurance is a ripoff. Goes on to say tell them you'll sign up for the unlimited data plan with your Treo. And so that gives you an extra $100 off if you do the unlimited plan. He says get it and then cancel it the next day. Oh, that's interesting. Says reps don't get as much money if you're still on a contract. So if you upgrade on the phone with Verizon, the store reps won't be as motivated to help you. And also ask for loyalty credit on the phone before going to the store. And it says one way to work the system, if you have new every two and are out of contract, is to call customer care, have them put you back into the contract, but ask for a loyalty credit up to $60 off your next bill. So what is this? Is this if you have a phone shut off? I don't really understand that one. But anyway, I'll let you guys read the full article here. If you're looking to save money at Verizon, this is the place to get the information on some tricks you can use. All right, how many of you actually went out that were on the Eastern Seaboard and saw the total eclipse? If you did not, which, of course, it wasn't available here in Honolulu because it was still daylight and we didn't get to see it. There's a great, it wasn't in a position for us to see it either, but if you want to check it out, there's a great, I'll have a link up to some very, very cool pictures that are available, and you can all check out the time-elapse photography that someone did, and they did a real good job on this. Or there's an article over on Ars Technica. As a matter of fact, Ars Technica has a brand new website design and looks pretty nice. And I guess this is like the third or fourth design in a couple of years. And I am looking at this and I do like how they've minimized the header information on this website. They've done a good job. They really, really did. You know, every once in a while you see a real sweet web design and you think, wow, how come I couldn't have thought of that? But anyway, did a good job on this. But there's a good article here on how the RIAA views its customers and goes into talking about some of the comments they've made recently. You know that we've bashed on them quite a bit in recent past, and I'm not going to really go into this any more depth, but I'll definitely link this up in the show notes. And we all know what they think of us, but this goes to iterate it even deeper. Those of you that have been playing around in Second Life, if you've been making money in Second Life, don't forget, come April 15th, profits earned online must be reported by the IRS. And so be very, very careful about that. So there's an article over on CNNMoney.com, and they're saying the title of it is Second Life's Looming Tax Threat. Now, that's another thing, too. If you have a PayPal account and you're getting ready to do your taxes and you've sold stuff on eBay, be very, very careful. Because the IRS definitely, if they look at you or if they get information, I think they've actually asked PayPal for some information, they're going to find out what type of dollar amounts you've done through your PayPal account. And if you're using that as a slush fund and not reporting that income, be forewarned. The Uncle Sam always gets his money. He really, really does. And the percentage that you'd have to pay now is much, much less than what you would have to pay someone after an audit or after they send you a note saying, hey, that $20,000 that was brought into your PayPal account, you didn't pay any taxes on it. Here's your bill. Not good. Okay, so be very, very careful. Make sure that you're reporting your online earnings. And if you're making money in Second Life and converting virtual world money to real world money, that is taxable. Now, if you're making a profit, of course, you're allowed to take all your expenses, etc. But the question that they're kind of looming here is at what point, because you've used real money to get virtual money and you've got virtual holdings in there that increase in value, at what point does the government really start looking at that? Very interesting, especially when if you cash out and make money, it's definitely, according to, I guess, IRS rules, is definitely taxable. So, you know, it's going to be one of those things where the IRS will probably at some point have to go after it. So, you know, an easy target for sure, because the Linden Labs folks, I'm sure, has a record of all these different transactions that go on, and all they have to do is report back to the, because, you know, you've registered as a Second Life user, and if you're a merchant, you've got a, you know, all that data is tied in there. So be careful. And it goes for any online community you're on or anything you're doing online. All that is taxable income. Okay, the FCC is forcing rural phone companies to carry voice IP traffic. Now, this is actually a good thing. The Federal Communications Commission has lifted one barrier to wider voice IP use, ruling late last week that rural telephone companies must allow voice IP calls from other carriers to connect to their local lines. Regulators in Nebraska and South Carolina had ruled that voice IP calls could be blocked from connecting to the local incumbents' local exchange carriers, saying that traffic from some voice IP service providers wasn't considered a telecommunications service and could therefore be blocked. Well, this decision is definitely a good one on the FCC, and that they are being very, very, at least in this ruling, the majority of the FCC commissioners are opposing network neutrality regulations, and they're making sure that everyone plays nice in the space. So finally, we get a win. We get a win on our side, folks. That's a good one for us. Now, for those of you that get the newsletter, you'll notice that from time to time, I've been sticking in two or three articles that don't make the show. And part of it is because when I'm going through and I'm finding stuff, I find articles, I think, yeah, it's a cool article, but it definitely doesn't quite make the cut. So make sure you're reviewing the show notes. And there's always there's always 2 to 3 articles that I put in the show notes that are not covered within the podcast. And so be looking for those in there, okay? All right, next article up is how to choose a breakthrough domain for your website. And I have to admit, today I was pretty lucky. I was able to score a domain name called imgeek.com, imgeek.com. It's not pointing at anything yet. I have to wait for the 14-day cooling off period, I guess that's what they call it. You have to wait for some reason to get the domain. When you get through a domain auction, I think it's basically to make sure the other person is actually not renewed it or something. I don't know exactly the full story on that. But, you know, as we worked over at Raw Voice, you know, we got really lucky, I think, in coming up with the Raw Voice name and actually that domain. But when we were getting ready to launch some of the other sites, actually primarily Blueberry, wow. And, of course, you can find Blueberry over at blubrry.com. We had a heck of a time, trying to find good domain names. And we went through iteration of just, oh, it was painful. It really, really was. So they've got some great tips here on how to choose a domain for your website. And there are great domains out there available today. You just kind of got to use a little bit of smart thinking when you're going through and looking for sites. And a thesaurus really helps at times as well. So if you've got something that you've got something in mind, I've used a thesaurus at times to. Boy, I just destroyed that, didn't I? A thesaurus at times to. Find a similar name that what I could use in an actual domain name I wanted to buy. Just remember, go out there and check out these quick tips. And, as you're looking at stuff when you're driving down the road and a good domain name comes to your, comes through in your brain, write it down and check right away on it. And if you find it, always, always register it immediately. Because, you know, typically stuff triggers us into thinking about domain names that we may want to buy. And what that ends up happening is you may have heard something on the radio or, it's something outside influence, and probably you are not the only person that was influenced by that. All right, I have to say that every once in a while, the Japanese come up with a really, really cool thing. And my sister absolutely needs one of these devices. It's called a drowse prevention alarm. Now, I think after I get done producing the show, I need one of these myself. Because there's been times when I've gotten done with the show and I've started working on show notes and I woke up with my head down in my keyboard, essentially, with my hand mashing a letter, and I've got 25,000 Z's on the website and nothing else going on. But what the Japanese have come up with is a little device. It almost looks like a hearing aid of sort. It's actually a wireless headset. You stick this in your phone, and so long as your head is straight up and you're looking at a screen, you're okay. But the second you kind of bow down, like your head's sinking, like you're going to do a little touch and go, where your chin is actually touching your chest, this thing has a little, probably a little switch in it, a mercury switch of some sort, that will wake you up. It flips the switch on and it gives you a little tone, wake up, wake up. And they're primarily trying to sell this to people that are driving, that are prone to falling asleep while they're driving. That's why I said my sister needs one of these. But very, very cheap. It's called the RevX Drowse Prevention Alarm. And it's $10.30. And so long as you don't fall asleep on it, you won't get the little alarm that wakes you up. Very, very cool. But I tell you, I don't know if I don't know if I'd want to. Depends on how loud it is. And leave it to the Japanese to come up with little little knickknacks like that. And I think it'd be pretty cool. Pretty cool to have one. And if nothing else, it's quite the novelty item. Good present to give. All right, we talked last week on how there was supposedly a Vista activation mechanism in place where people were actually working hard by using a random number generator of some sort to come up with an actual activation code. Turns out that was totally bogus. But it appears, though, now there is actually a activation bypass that is available that's out there. The group has found a way to crack it, and it's surprising it's took them this long. But this one looks like it has a little meat behind it. There's a bunch of sites reporting on it and talking about what the group had done to actually to do this. And essentially what they have done is they've taken OEM version of Windows Vista, and they've built a little utility to make it think it's on a box that it was supposed to come on. In other words, if you were supposed to get a Dell OEM version, and Dell has a different type of authentication protocol that they use with Windows, so that essentially it was supposed to be some sort of step that was being saved to annoy the people that were actually booting a machine for the first time. But what they've done is they've done some little hack to make it the Vista trick to think it's actually on a machine that it isn't. Very, very sneaky what they've done here, but we'll see how long this lasts if Microsoft shuts them down. And but you know, it's if one thing, it's another, because I believe that these guys are out there that are looking to circumvent these authentications are going to continue to work at it, and it's probably just going to be a never-ending battle here for the folks at Microsoft. All right, those of you that are using Microsoft Live OneCare, I would tell you to proceed with extreme caution. The Windows has failed its second virus test via the Microsoft Live OneCare security software. It was tested by a firm. Now let me see if I can read what they've actually said here. It was actually pretty bad in that. OneCare was the only failure among 17 antivirus program tested by the AV Comparatives Organization. I don't know where this organization is out of, but Microsoft software only spotted 82.4% of the 500,000 viruses the independent group subjected it to. And this test is the second in less than a month that Microsoft's antivirus software has failed. And this came off of the BBC news website at bbc.co.uk. And so, you know, I've heard a couple of people say that that's what they're using as their antivirus on Windows Vista. So actually, if you don't even have to be using Windows Vista, you just can be, if you're subscribed to their Live OneCare system, be very, very cautious. And I would, my personal opinion is you need to go out and probably buy a commercial application that, you know, the folks are in the antivirus business full time. All right, the space shuttle has been, Space Shuttle Atlantis has been rolled back to the vehicle assembly building to allow workers to begin repairs on damage caused by a hailstorm last week. And the shuttle's March launch has been canceled. And so sadly, it is not going to be getting up in March. They are going to try to do another launch attempt in late April. So here we go, another delay, but better safe than sorry. You know, it makes you wonder how many times is the shuttle been subjected to severe weather. I guess this is the first time that I know, at least in my recollection, that the vehicle had to be brought back to the vehicle assembly building because of hail. I think the vehicle has taken lightning strikes before and they haven't brought it back. But this is my first recollection, at least, of hail. So hopefully the NASA folks get that turned around pretty quick. All right, there's a letter. Actually, Boing Boing has got a... We talked about how the RIAA was sending out notices to students that they essentially owed them money for sharing files on peer-to-peer networks. And one of the students got a notice. He went over to the website, went through the process, and had to pay. Here's what it says. We thank you for your payment of $3,456.23 to settle case number. It's blanked out. And then it goes on below that to say, looking forward to future business together. So I don't know if this was a pun by the RIAA. So the student actually went over there and paid the $3,400 that the RIAA said he needed to pay to settle with them. But pretty disturbing on here that it was said, looking forward to future business together. They must have used some sort of a default payment system that they didn't take the time to change the templates on, because I don't think that's a... it would have been more appropriate. It would have said, okay, do not share any more files on a peer-to-peer network, and you won't have to pay us again, instead of saying, looking forward to future business together. So that's up on Boing Boing if you want to take a look at the screenshot on that. Well, there's a report out that's saying that there's so much data being created that there's not enough space to actually store it all. And if we all weren't being prudent in deleting content, they're saying that in 2006, the world generated 161 billion gigabytes, or it's actually 161 exabytes of digital information. Is that simply amazing? They're saying it's the equivalent of stacking, it's like 12 stacks of books that each reach from the earth to the sun. Or you might think of it as 3 million times information in all the books ever written. It says, according to the IDC, you'd need more than 2 billion of the most capacious iPods on the market to get 161 exabytes. So 2 billion iPods to store all the data that was created in the world last year. Said the previous best estimate came from researchers in California in 2003 that said that the world was creating about 5 exabytes per year of content. It's true. Well, look at how many of you have more than a terabyte of storage space in your homes? I bet you many of you do. I bet you've been multiple computers. You've probably got closer to 2 or 3. I know that personally, just on external hard drives alone, I've got, just sitting on this desk, I got a 500 gig. There's a 400. That's 900 gigs right there. Down underneath is another 400. So I just have 1.3 within 3 feet of me here. And that's not including all of the storage that's in my PCs. Of course, now I'm doing video capture from HD, so that's using a lot of storage as well. But how many of you are doing the same thing? Are you out of storage? Are you finding yourself going to the big boxes and buying a hard drive every whip stitch? All right, those of you that are WordPress users, this is a very, very serious issue. If you have downloaded a new version of WordPress within the last couple of days, you need to go over to WordPress. Matter of fact, if you downloaded WordPress version 2.1.1, within the past 3 to 4 days, your files may be included in a security exploit that was added by a cracker. So they had someone that got into their system, added a naughty file to the actual distribution, the master distribution of WordPress, and that got deployed. Now, for those of you that are listening to the show and missed the date, today is, so we can just get a good reference for you here, today is March 6th. So from about March 2 to about, or maybe March 1st to about March 5th would be the window. They saying that all versions 2.11 are suspect and that you should upgrade to 2.1.2 immediately. So be very aware of that. And for those of you that may have installed a site here in the last couple of days, this is not good. Their gold disk essentially got infected. Like to hear more on that, on how that actually happened, but I doubt we'll ever hear it. The Electronic Frontier Foundation has sued another organization that has been sending out DMCA takedown notices. It looks like the EFF is having some good traction in that and trying to eliminate these people that are doing these bogus takedown requests and are going after them pretty aggressively. So here's another lawsuit where they're going over a guy. I'm not going to go into the details of it, but it's nice to see that some people are being put in check for some of the stuff that they're doing out there. There's a little bit of report that independent DVDs are running into trouble in that they are not being able to get the distribution that they did because of so many people buying stuff online, renting online, and so forth. They're saying that organizations are rental groups like Netflix and so forth, they're not really buying these independent DVDs and making it available for people to rent, where before a lot of independent films were bought and put on the shelves, you know, and a lot of the rental places that you would go into. Now, you remember back in the day when you went to a rental place and you would get VHS tapes, and they had VH tapes on every possible subject. And, you know, you'd go in and half that stuff probably hadn't been rented in years. But every once in a while, if you wanted to go back and watch a classic or something, they'd have it. But it appears that both Netflix and Amazon are have somewhat limited solutions or selections when it comes to independent DVDs. So a little bit of news on that. And if you find a good source for independent DVDs, I'd love to hear some feedback from you on that. We've got a couple of things here at the end. Oh, I talked about earlier in the show how Microsoft is going to be moving most of its $1 billion advertising budget to digital media. This is great, great news for those of us that are looking to capitalize on some of those advertising dollars that they're bringing to the online market. I'm going to be very interested to see where they distribute that, where they put the placements. When you start seeing more Microsoft ads pop up, you're definitely going to know that they're in the space, but they're bringing it all online, at least the most of it. So that is definitely a major shift, and in that they're not going to be putting on TV, they're not going to be putting on radio. They're saying a little bit of IPTV is going to be, they're going to do a little advertising in IPTV, about 3%. And so Microsoft, as we've stated over at Raw Voice, we'd be more than happy to set some campaigns up for you. And you can contact me via my email address. Be happy to help you spend a itsy bitsy part of that percentage of that $1 billion. Oh, gosh. I can put together a heck of a campaign for you. Really, really can. Heck, I'd even come and meet with you face to face. Oh, gosh. All right. Next up is the Gmail domain has been a little bit under challenge with Google and another group. I believe it's a group called the Independent International Investment Research Group is trying to essentially get Gmail to be revoked from Google and reverted to the company, I believe, that was essentially disputing Google's ownership of the actual Gmail trademark. And what this is essentially going to come down to is I'm sure Google's going to have to write this company a big check, because I just can't see them giving up gmail.com. But I believe there was some sort of a ruling that was made that this other company had precedence first. And I just can't believe that the trademark lawyers of Google did not deal with this before. Maybe they said, well, it's a mitigated risk. Let's go ahead and do it, and then we'll pay this guy off. But your email address could change. That could be forthcoming. I doubt it, though, to be honest with you. All right, every once in a while I come across a very cool Firefox plugin, and the one I really like right now is AutoCopy. And it's a great, great application, and it selects text and automatically copies it to the clipboard. It's like Linux or Merc, and it works with Firefox, Mozilla, and Thunderbird. And check this out. I really like this one here. And as I find Firefox add-ins, I will I'll definitely drop it into the show as well. All right, folks, it's late here. It really, really is. I got a late start on the podcast tonight. So I know I've had a couple of minor, like little yawns in the show, and I apologize about that. But I've got a couple of audio comments here. Actually, it's from the same gentleman. It's two in a row, so I'm going to play the first one, make some comments, and then I will play his second part.
Todd, this is Frank in Milwaukee.
Hey, Frank.
A bit of a gripe, not a big one.
Okay.
You mentioned something that I take a little bit of a dispute with in saying that not to write letters to your representatives because letters can sit in a sack somewhere. I write to my representatives a lot about issues we care about and other ones. And I do like to do it in hard copy. I still think there's a significant impact to that. I do mail it. I do get replies in writing. I called my senator's office this morning in Washington to ask about the timeliness of getting the mail and how it's regarded. And she did acknowledge that there can be a delay. You know, we do in the ready some radiation process to that concerning for concerns for anthrax and such. So there can be a delay. But, in fact, it gets there, it's well-received, and it's responded to. I still prefer this. I still think hard copy in hand, you know, with a nice blue signature and some colored heading has a significant impact, and I encourage others to continue this mode of communicating with your representatives also. Thanks, Todd. Great shows. Bye.
Hey, Frank. You know, I agree wholeheartedly with that, but I think the concern I have is that from what I've been told in the past is that the delay can be considerable. And so I know there's sometimes you'll have a time to sit down and, you know, I believe that writing a letter is most effective as well. And, you know, putting your signature on there and it gets the stamp that's from your district going into your representative. That definitely proves that who you are and where you live, you know, that really resonates with them. But I think the concern I have is when some bill is in the very early stages and it needs some immediate support, some immediate bump, you know, it needs to, you know, the congressional delegate has to know that you're behind this, a phone call or email or a fax. And I know that the fax and the email probably is less effective than a handwritten letter. But, you know, unless they really, really speeded it up, I've been told that letters can be delayed not weeks, but, you know, up to a month or more. And I guess that's where my concern comes in. And some of these fast track stuff, we need to really, you know, maybe what you should, I think maybe what the recommendation should be is email or call your congressional rep first and then follow up with a letter. And, you know, that at least that way you've covered your base three different ways. You've got the word out immediately. You've followed up with an email that they can, you know, maybe do a quick count on. And also when they get the hard letter, boom, that gives them something to respond to. You know, generally when they call, they'll ask you what your name is, what district you're in, are you a registered voter? And believe me, I think, you know, I think they, don't quote me on this, but I think they know. Maybe or maybe not. Maybe someone can help me out on this. Maybe someone that's worked on the Board of Elections or something. But I believe they know whether or not a person has voted. They wouldn't know who. Maybe I'm incorrect. Maybe that's only Michigan. I don't know. But anyway, they definitely get your information so they can respond to you because I get letters back all the time. And I'm kind of in a funny deal here because I live here in Honolulu. My actual state of residence is back in Michigan because that's where I maintain my permanent home of record because of, you know, being in the Navy, we're allowed to do that. I don't have to change my residency here to Hawaii, but when I get ready to retire, then I'll have to do that ultimately, and my representative will end up being the people here in this district. So I'm always sending stuff back to Michigan. And when I do, I have to kind of preface it, say, okay, here's my status, and this is why, you know, even though I'm living in Hawaii, this is why I want your action, you know, within this specific district in Michigan. And so, you know, they pay attention to people within the district the most. So I do want to play your second part of your voicemail as well.
Geez, this is Frank in Milwaukee again. Sorry for being a pest.
Nah, not a pest.
I just wanted to mentioned that sometimes recently, especially down in Jacksonville, but I understand that situation, you're a little bit more subdued when you start the show. And your signature, your trademark, is quite a bit of enthusiasm packed into that. A welcome to Geek News Central, and it has a nice punch to it. Now, that being said, I don't like that to continue on and have an the local news type scenario of everybody laughing and having a good time. I can't stand those type of podcasts. I tried some of the CNET's those three individuals on there, and it just puts me off the forced fun. Let's all laugh and chuckle through this podcast. It just lends itself to it's an annoyance to me. You do a great job. You're really professional, but I like that punch in the front end. I always like your enthusiasm. It's one of the reasons we think you're one of the best, if not the best. Bye, Todd.
Hey, thanks for that. That just made my day. It really, really did. And great feedback. And yeah, when I'm on the road, my rig is a little different. And when I'm here, I'm on essentially a condenser mic. And the headset that I have is a closed cuff headset, so I can really tell what my levels are, so that when I do the intro of the show, I'm able to vocalize it at the point where I know where I'm not going to blow the actual meter off the chart. But when I'm on the road and I'm working off a single PC, then I'm essentially, I don't have as good of a audio reference, so I have to really be careful on essentially saturating the audio signal. So that's maybe a little bit part of it. Definitely, I have my next. I used to always travel with a different mic set when I go out, and I went a real light on this last trip, but I was not at all happy with the complete show quality on the last go around. So I'll probably go back to my original. Have to carry a few extra things, but it keeps the quality up while I'm traveling. All right, wow, we're at an hour, and I'm almost done here. Let me get into some email. We got some great show comments today, and let me pull those up. All right, the first one here is from Dave, and actually Dave sent me two emails. The first email was on a link that essentially is a report that came out from the Department of Transportation saying that Windows Vista Explorer 7 and Office 2007 was not authorized to be rolled out on any of the machines within the Department of Transportation. And I'm not surprised about those. Those organizations have big IT staffs. They go through and have to do lots of regression testing to make sure that the programs, when they do a push, when they update the machines, that all the legacy stuff will continue to work. But he essentially goes on to say that this memo to his staff, where CIO Daniel Mintz says he had placed an indefinite moratorium on the upgrade, as there appears to be no compelling technical or business case for upgrading these new Microsoft software products. Furthermore, there appears to be specific reasons not to upgrade, and among the concerns were compatibility with software applications currently in use at the department. Again, like I said, legacy type stuff. The cost of the upgrade, and of course, DOT is getting ready to move to a new headquarters, so they're saying they should wait and not upgrade any machines at this time. He said that only those with written approval by the DOT's CIO could get the test systems to run to start doing viability testing and regression testing. So I'll have a link up that in the show notes. Dave also got on me for my mispronunciation of Symantec. I always say Symantec, and it's Symantec, okay? And I don't know, just the way I've always said it, and it's not the only word I destroy in this show. So thanks, Dave. I definitely appreciate it. But you guys keep me square. That's the most important thing. Got an email from Tom, and Tom does a great job. He does a podcast over on Blueberry Forest that highlights podcasters. Tom does his own show as well. He says, "Hey, Todd, this week my dean informed me the college district has this week moved to ban all music downloads. Have not read the wording of the new policy. Hope they didn't ban the downloading of podcasts." He says, "I wonder if they got a call from the RIAA." So, Tom, what if you can? What school is that? I don't know what school is that you work at. I'd like to find out more information on that. But the college has banned all music downloads. That's something right there, folks. That tells you that this organization known as the RIAA is obviously having an effect out there and scaring the pants off of school districts to the point where they would ban the downloading of MP3s. Can you imagine a college student not being able? I wonder if this would include legal purchased music online. Does that include that? Tom, let us know. I'd like to hear more for sure. Got an email from Brian. He says, hey, I got laid off in December and I decided to go start a consulting firm. I listened to all your podcasts, and after hearing you plug GoDaddy so many times, I went to GoDaddy to get a website and saved over, he says, over $50,000 in the process. Thanks, Brian. Brian, what in the world? You saved over $50,000? Tell me more. What did you do? You saved $50,000 on one of my codes? What did you buy? $50,000. Are you sure? Is that a typo? Or was it $50 or actually $50,000? I got laid off in December and decided to go start a consulting firm. Listen to all your podcasts and hearing you plug GoDaddy. And went to GoDaddy to get a website and saved over $50,000 in the process. Tell me more. I want to hear more about that, Brian, for sure. All right. I got a couple more emails. I got an email from Isaac. Says, hey, Todd, I'm in Toronto, Canada, and I've been listening to your show for quite a while. I'm listening to the March 2nd show, and you mentioned Chris Pirillo is going back to XP. I don't get it. I've not had a single problem with Vista. The only thing that it does that can be a little annoying is when you play video and music, Vista stutters checking the files. That's it, nothing else. Maybe I'm not using Vista to the fullest like Chris does, but I'm having a great experience with it. Keep up the great work. Regards, Isaac. Hey, Isaac, Chris actually put out a video on exactly why he did the revert back to XP, and he has done that. Now, I know that he's running it on a partition, so I think he actually has XP still installed on the machine. So let's see if he, if you go over and look at his website at Chris Pirillo or Pirillo.com, I believe is the actual website address. You'll be able to find out exactly what he was talking about there. All right, I think that's all I've got here, folks, tonight. And there was a whole bunch of other stuff that, yeah, I think that was all I had for email. Kind of short email comments tonight, but great show. Last couple of shows, I think, and I'd like to hear you guys' feedback on them. And as always, thanks for being part of the family. Thanks for being part of the Ohana here. You can always send your comments on any of the topics we have or just, you know, submit your own if you want to 619-342-7365. Again, 619-342-7365. Those of you over in the UK or overseas, plus 1-619-342-7365. I guess I've said that three times too many. Or your email comments to geeknews@gmail.com. And as always, thanks for, of course, being part of the Ohana. And we'll see you on Friday. Everyone have a great week. Aloha.